All right, perfect timing.
Good morning.
Okay, well, good morning, everybody. Today is September 1st, 2016, and this is the monthly meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Robert Spagnoletti. I'm chair of the board. I'm joined today by Carol Schwartz. That constitutes quorum, believe it or not. And our other two board members, one had a long-planned trip before she became a board member, and the other one had an emergency, and so Mr. Wade's unable to be with us here today, but we have a relatively short agenda, and it's August, and I think we can manage. We are located in room 540 South here, 1 Judiciary Square, which is our regular meeting room, and an agenda was posted consistent with the Open Meetings Act, and I have no changes to the agenda. How about you, Ms. Schwartz?
No, I do not.
All right, so by consensus, it'll be adopted without changes, which brings us to item 4 of the agenda, a report from the Director of Open Government, Ms. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to Mr. Barton, we have conducted a complete audit of boards and commissions and found that 14 of 175 boards and commissions were failing to comply with the Open Meetings Act. This month, we email compliance letters to the public bodies, and all but one has replied, and that would be the Mayor's Advisory Board on Veterans Affairs. That compliance letter was addressed to Director Tammy Lambert, who is no longer with the Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs, who oversees that public body. So we renewed our compliance request with the Interim Director, Sharon Hines, and so we have yet to hear from her, and that a renewed request was sent on Monday of this week.
Okay.
Additionally, there is one public body which seems to be struggling with compliance, the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs. This is despite OMA training and numerous emails and a call with the chairman. So we have given them a date of this Friday to provide all of the records that were requested in the compliance letter, specifically asking them to post their agendas and meeting minutes, as they have numerous minutes meetings on the central calendar, but there's nothing attached to them. So needless to say, now that that audit process is in place, we're going to begin enforcement actions when necessary.
Are they just having technological issues or just... Do you have a sense of what the problem
is? It's unclear. Okay. Of course, not unlike many public bodies, they've switched their administrative point of contact. So I've been in communication with her. She's been trained on the Open Meetings Act. We're giving them a lot of rope. It's the best answer.
God bless you. It's like herding cats.
Right, yes. So I don't know. We've given them all the tools they need. They've got access to the calendar. They've got access to Mr. Barton and myself. I don't know what the disconnect is.
Okay. Well, thanks for the efforts.
Sure. So OMA and FOIA advice, since August 4th of 2016, Mr. Barton and I have fielded 36 requests for advice on compliance with FOIA and the Open Meetings Act. As for trainings, there have been no combined MOTA trainings since the last board meeting. The Office of Open Government has conducted training on the OMA for OSSE staff, charged with supporting the Uniform Per Pupil Student Funding Formula Working Group. This was the requirement that was a result of the OOG opinion that we issued in July, finding that body a public body.
Right.
In August, we conducted an Open Meetings Act training of staff with DCRA and the Mayor's Advisory Commission on the Caribbean Community Affairs, and a FOIA training for the Office of Risk Management. We're conducting, for the first time, a combined Open Meetings Act and FOIA training this afternoon. It's going to be a marathon session with what will be a new agency starting on October 1st, the Criminal Code Reform Commission. And that concludes my update.
Wow. Still a busy month.
It has.
During August, considering it was August.
Right.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Mr. Sobin, a report from the Office of Government Ethics, please.
All right. See if I can make it just as short.
I think it might be a little bit longer.
Oh, relatively speaking. All right, item 5, or Roman 5A, update on status of Office of Government Ethics operations, a recap of our previous month's statistics. This month we opened 4 investigations, same as last month. Up from 2 we did in July. We closed 2 investigations this month. We had closed 3 last month, and we closed 4 in July. Investigations currently open are 12. Last month we had 10 open, and in July we had 8 open. And the number of investigations stayed or inactive continues to be 20. It may go up 1 today. when we get to that part of it. Item B, publication and reporting obligations. We are in compliance with our publication and reporting obligations. We submitted a list of registered lobbyists on August 18th for publication in the DC Register pursuant to the statutory requirement to do so.
Okay.
Item C, trainings and outreach. As I mentioned last month, we are continuing to prepare for this year's Best Practices Symposium at the UDC David A. Clark School of Law. The title, Ethics, Victim of an Outsourced Government, with a question mark. That was after a sort of a in-house contest to see who could choose.
Good thing there's a question mark at the end of that. That's all I can say.
Right. The Ethics Day course offerings, which will be numerous and last the entire day, will allow folks to fulfill both their CLE and mandatory ethics training obligations.
And the word's getting out to folks in like OAG and other places where the...
We are in the mid... We've already sent notices. We're going to ramp up those notices with the introduction of a flyer. We're going to be posting, sending out to everybody.
I think I'm going to be in contact with the Attorney General in the next 2 weeks on unrelated stuff, and I'll make a point when I speak with him to, you know, hopefully encourage his troops to attend those trainings.
Yep, and we've been doing the same when we've
And can you give us a time again and the place?
Well, it's going to start. The first program offering is going to start at 10 in the morning, Ashley, I believe, okay. And it's going to go all day nonstop until we get to our symposium that night, which starts at 6 o'clock. And we'll go to 8 o'clock. That's October 20th.
I had 3 to 5 also listed. Is there any particular reason I had?
We just have additional course offerings during that time.
Okay. Maybe I just decided I wanted to be there then. It's particular.
Something stuck out that one of the
Do we know where it's going to be held on UDC campus?
In the moot courtroom of the David A. Clark School of Law.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Trainings attended by staff. Only two. Attorneys Cooks and Shanoon attended legal writing seminars that included workshops on writing to persuade and edit like a pro. Mr. Shanoon also attended the ABA annual conference from August 4th through August 9th as a member of the House of Delegates. At the conference, he also attended multiple CLE courses that were...
Thank you for not noting on the record that it was from Maryland and not from the District of Columbia.
We'll get him on the district side.
Yeah, I know we will.
Conducted by staff, we did 5, which was one fewer than the 6 we did last month, about average for this time of year. This included one regular 2-hour monthly ethics training at which our two new board members were in attendance, and we also did 2 new employee orientations and 2 MSS trainings. Item D, advisory opinions, advice. Informal advice, we responded to 62 informal advice queries since the last meeting, and that was actually up from 51 last month. I was a little surprised. We are working on the post-employment opinion for former council member Vincent Orange on the permissible parameters of his new job as head of the D.C. Chamber of Commerce. We do need to get it out quickly as there is a good deal of public interest in the issue, and the council will be back in session shortly.
Well, I know that you and Mr. Grimaldi are actively discussing those issues.
Yep. Item E, ethics legislation and the Comprehensive Code of Conduct. The council is currently on recess. However, Senior Attorney Grimaldi spoke with the committee staff last week concerning the CCC. The staffer had some questions, and we are encouraged that the legislation seems to be moving or will move when the council comes back into session. Okay. Item F, rulemaking. We're still working on a draft of the rulemaking. The expected slowdown of our regular work in August never really materialized, and our general counsel is out of the country at the moment. We'll be back shortly.
The world traveler.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to mention something on the last.
Yes.
If you need us to help with the code of conduct, please let us know. Okay.
Okay. Will do. Absolutely. Item G, the budget. Last month I reported that we were looking for additional budgetary authority to spend our O-type funds to alleviate some last-minute end-of-the-year spending pressures. I am told by my financial folks that we have found it. We have also freed up some funds from purchase orders that were never completely utilized, like from the vendor who maintains our e-filing system.
Great.
So that's good.
This is the end of the fiscal year.
Yep.
cleanup and push.
Item H, staffing. As you know, Ms. Petzelt has departed for the Greener Pastures of Michigan. We anticipate that the new attorney will begin working next Tuesday, and dare I say, we will be completely staffed once again. Maybe I shouldn't say that.
Knock on wood.
Right. <Get out. laughs> Item I, lobbyist financial disclosure matters. Again, just to reiterate, when a lobbyist is fined for failing to file its registration form or activity report, the Ethics Act allows them the opportunity to seek a waiver of the fine from the board. The lobbyist must demonstrate good cause for a waiver of the fine, and there is one waiver request before the board today that I'll let Attorney Cooks address. N. Ray Carter Davis.
So Carter and Davis is a registered lobbyist that was fined $300 for failing to file its July 2016 activity report. Carter filed a waiver request to waive that fine. Their reasons are, number one, it's a newly created entity and this would have been their first business filing. Number two, they had not engaged in any lobbying activity in the prior 6 months. And also, the email notification that was sent to the email address that they provided was initially overlooked. She opposed the waiver request. Our reasons are that Carter and Davis is a registered lobbyist, and as such, they're responsible for knowing the rules and all the filing requirements that come with being a registered lobbyist. Two, the notification of the filing deadline was sent to them prior to the deadline. And three, it is irrelevant whether they engaged in lobbying activity or not because the Ethics Act requires all lobbyists to file an activity report. Four,
even if there's no activity.
Even if there's no activity.
That would be the point of the report, of course.
Exactly. The deadline notification as well as the penalty, the late penalty notification was sent to the email address. So if they initially overlooked the first notification, they could have seen the second notification. And to date, they still have not filed. So we argue that they have not shown good cause to have the waiver request granted and ask that the board deny the request.
So what I like about this is that we get these, obviously, waiver requests all the time. And sometimes they have just reason number one. Sometimes they have just reason number two. Or sometimes they have just reason number three. This had all three of them. And each time we get one of those reasons, we deny the waiver request. So I think that for all of the above reasons and all the ones that you mentioned, I would vote to deny the waiver request.
I vote to deny as well.
Okay. It's not going to be pretty. I did not say that. Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the next item. Speaking of the activity reports, Ms. Alawamne, our auditor, is currently conducting a desk review, or what we call a pre-audit, of the July 2016 lobbyist activity reports for the period covering January 1 through June 30th of this year. Our objective is to identify and flag disclosures made on Schedule A2, which includes political contributions and gifts made by the lobbyist to benefit an official in the executive or legislative branch. This analysis will also summarize the significant subject areas lobbyists focused on during the said reporting period. After the desk reviews are completed, the next step is to conduct a random sampling of the activity reports to select which of them will be audited, which of the lobbyists will be audited. Ms. Alawamne will be providing a summary of this review by the or in time for the October board meeting. Next item, Last month, I distributed the internal procedures that were developed by Ms. Alawamne to be used to audit the lobbyist activity reports. It is important that we have these standard operating procedures in place to ensure the reports are reviewed in a uniform, consistent, and predictable manner. If there are no additional comments, then we will just go ahead and adopt those standards as final.
I think that they're terrific, and I think that the audits and the reports that have been the ones that are being produced recently are terrific. I think it's been the system is working the way it's supposed to work, which is great.
Okay, good.
And I agree, and hear, hear.
Thanks.
All right, Clara.
Next item, financial disclosures. Under the public filers, we have identified the remaining 7 employees in the entire government.
7 out of how many?
Several thousand, almost 3,000.
That's amazing.
That have not filed their financial disclosure statements, despite our efforts to reach out to them by sending several reminders, calling them, begging them, they have failed to file. 2, however, of the 7 employees have indicated that they plan to submit waiver requests to the board challenging their status as public filers.
Okay.
1 has filed as of yesterday, which we will tee up for the October meeting. There really is no process in the rules for doing this, so we treat them as we would a waiver or a partial waiver of the public filing requirement when folks don't want to disclose their spouse's income for security reasons, things that we went over already.
Right.
So we would anticipate treating that in the same manner. They'll file it, we'll file an opposition or not, and then go from there.
Makes sense.
All right, but we'll have those for the next. Unfortunately, next month we'll probably have
enforcement actions on those 5 others.
Yeah, because it's not enough just to fine them now. If they're actively refusing to file,
yeah, well, that's the problem. And you guys see my New Jersey's coming out. And the Office of Government Ethics is extraordinarily patient and flexible in trying to get these folks just simply to file, which is the goal here. And so by the time we get, I mean, it's September. This thing, they were filed, supposed to be filed in May. And if you called, emailed, begged, pleaded, cajoled, threatened, and they're not filing the document,
yeah,
I think we're sort of stuck. Yep. But 7 out of 3,000 plus, I mean, that's nothing short of amazing.
That's miraculous.
Because I remember our first year, it was in the hundreds, right? It was like 300 or 400 people had not filed by this point in the year, right? Because this went all the way into the fall when we first adopted the system before we kind of got it all working the way it's amazing.
We're making progress, indeed.
Yeah, that's great.
No updates on the confidential filers. Non-confidential investigations, item J. I notice Mr. Williams is here.
Yes.
And so the first item I have is Mr. In re Jaron Price. Mr. Williams, do you want to... Do you want to introduce yourself, and we can discuss the status of the case?
Yeah. Thank
you. Welcome, Mr. Williams.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Good morning, Mr. Grimaldi, and Chairman, and Your Honor. I am here representing Mr. Jaron Price in his matter. Several counts have been charged against him.
Correct.
He recently brought me aboard to represent him less than 2 weeks ago, and we're here today to submit an amended scheduling order for the board's approval.
And we did, for the record, got your notice of appearance and your motion to continue the hearing, which we granted. We did that by email. And then also we received a draft amended scheduling order that the parties have worked out. And let me just say, first of all, welcome to the case.
Thank you.
Secondly, we very much appreciate your clear willingness and cooperation with the Office of Government Ethics in working this all out, because the system works so much better when people cooperate and the dates can be worked out collaboratively. I'm sure you know at this point, although we have a very close relationship with the Office of Government Ethics on everything that happens the minute the notice of violation is issued in a case, there's this imaginary wall that exists between us and Office of Government Ethics, and Mr. Grimaldi becomes our mouthpiece, if you will, except for when we're here in an open meeting. So any discussions or negotiations that you have about the case, go directly with Mr. Sobin, obviously. but we don't take part in any of that. We just do everything on the public record. That being said, Mr. Grimaldi, as attorney for the board and senior counsel for the board, will sometimes help facilitate a conversation because he knows kind of how we think and what we do and what you might expect going forward from the board, but his best prediction about what you could expect from us as we move forward in the process. If he can be of any assistance to either side along the way, if you, you know, for example, if you wanted to have a discussion, which we strongly encourage, about a possible negotiated disposition, which remains available throughout the entire process, if Mr. Grimaldi can be helpful, please don't hesitate to call on him. He has mediated a number of terrific negotiated dispositions in the past, but also put folks in contact with other people in the D.C. government that may need to be brought on board in order to make things work. And this may be such a case, yeah, since we have another agency, DOES, that necessarily, because of the way the statute is written, plays a role in this process in a case such as Mr. Price's. So we have with the new date of the hearing, for the record, is October 13th. The board has left the possibility. I don't anticipate it going more than a day, but if it did, we would have the 14th available as well if need be. The dates are, as proposed, are fine with me, and I believe fine with, yes, Ms. Schwartz as well. So I'm happy to sign the amended order, which I have right now. It's my stack of stuff here.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure this is the right one.
And I know, I know Ms. Hutchinson said it was okay with her as well. I don't know about,
right,
Mr. Wade.
I apologize for my slowness here today. A bum hand and a very long last name make it very difficult process. Oh. Great.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Williams. We appreciate you coming today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay. One other public matter, I believe?
Just one other public matter. In re Yvette Alexander.
Excuse me.
Just to give you a brief update, not a lot has happened. We are still in the process of trying to serve the CEO of one of the organizations where the council member served as a board member. We've had to hire an outside firm because we suspect there's been evasion of service. So that's ongoing. Although I don't think it's going to prevent us from actually calling the council member in to interview.
To interview.
So we'll be doing that shortly.
Okay.
Other than that, even though it's a public matter, I'd prefer not to get into the finer details of the investigation.
Sure, it's a pending investigation. Absolutely.
Okay, and on to item 6.
All right, which is an opportunity for public comment. And for the record, we make this time available for members of the public to address the board on matters that are properly before the board. But there is no, only staff is here today, other than Mr. Williams, who has now left. So we can go ahead and move on to 7, which is our closed session. So at this point, I would entertain a motion to move to an executive non-public session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Code 5-275B to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Code 2-575D13 and personnel matters pursuant to DC Code 2-575B10.
So moved.
And I'll second my own motion here, or that motion, since we're the only two people here. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No nays. We are going to then go off the public record at 11:26, and then we'll come back on again in closed session. Okay, it is 11:34. We're back on the public record. The only thing to report is that there was a matter which was brought to us as a formal matter as a result of a sworn complaint that the board has decided to stay at this time, and it will go on our stayed/inactive list. And nothing further, so we will now end the meeting. It's still technically 11:34, and we will reconvene on October 6th, I believe it is. I think it's the
6th. I don't have it.
The first Thursday in October.
Yeah.
Okay.
At 11 o'clock again.
We're done.